From Colombia to Canada to Miami, man, our guest today, Esteban Andrade, was amazing. Loved hearing his story. Loved hearing his struggle of not being able to even speak English and how it sharpened his sword and created the man he is today. And Sam, tell me, like, what was your biggest takeaway from the episode today?
I mean, it's tough to have one big takeaway, right? Because Esteban is a guy who just keeps on crushing, and nothing that happens to him will he allow to slow him down, right? He went through struggle as a kid in Colombia. He went through struggle as a teenager in Canada, right? And now he's becoming a serial entrepreneur, and there is a whole lot of things that is difficult with that. And no matter how hard it gets, he never lets it slow him down. I think my biggest takeaway probably has to be that nothing will beat out resilience. So for anyone that's going to watch this one, Esteban is not only an amazing serial entrepreneur, he is an amazing person to look to, especially if you're going through a little bit of a tough time, to see how to, you know, drive forward with resilience and with grit to unlock the next level. Guys, it's going to be a fantastic episode. We will have it uploaded very, very soon. Cannot wait for you to see it. It's the origin story with Esteban Andrade.
Welcome back to another episode of The Origin Story. Today, we have an awesome guest on, somebody who's in the digital marketing space, somebody who's in the real estate space, entrepreneur space. Today, I'm excited to get to know and get to interview Esteban. How are we doing today, my friend? How are we doing?
Doing well, man. Thank you for inviting me for this guest. Really excited.
Dude, I'm super excited about this one. It's something that I've talked about on the Origin Story quite a few times, and it's that I'm always looking for the next wave of greats or people that I think have the ability to carry, you know, not just this industry, but multiple industries into the future. And we've had some amazing names on who've already come on, who fit that bill. We've got so many names who are, you know, going to be on shortly who fit that bill. But when I recently flew down to Florida, to the other side of the country, to Miami, and I finally got to spend some quality time with Esteban. And one, I was blown away by how freaking nice of a guy he is. Two, just reassured that everything that I had seen from him, you know, through social media and online about, you know, how much he is just absolutely hustling and being a true, tried and true entrepreneur. Right after our Miami trip, it was adamant in my mind that he had to come on to the origin story. So Esteban, brother, it is absolutely phenomenal to have you here today, man. It is, it's a great honor for me. Super excited for you to meet one of my best friends in the world, Logan. And I want to tell you about what the origin story is all about. There's a lot of new entrepreneurs out there, right? Young investors, or even sometimes a little bit older. Maybe they're in their second career and they're trying to go and do this really uncomfortable thing, called entrepreneurship. And that's scary. There's a lot of risk. There's a lot of unknowns, and it's hard for people to make those moves. And when they look at people who are established, right, a lot of the times they can't relate to the money and the cars and the lavish lifestyles. But what they can relate to is seeing the struggles, right? The failures in life coupled with the successes, the journeys up. One of my great mentors taught me that people relate to origin stories. So Esteban, we'd love to hear yours because I know a little bit about it, man. It's a fantastic one. I can't wait to share it with our audience. So lead us in, man. Let us hear about that origin story.
Yeah, man, it kind of makes me feel a little bit, it's the first time I would really talk and dive deep into my origin story, because usually when podcasts, people ask me like how my business has scaled from whenever I started my business to where I am right now. But there's always layers of the onion that we need to be able to peel and get from people at the core. And originally, well, I was an immigrant, and I'm still an immigrant in this country, but I was an immigrant in Canada. And I came down from Colombia, where I was born and raised until 14 years old. And I was raised very, very spoiled by parents that went through really, really bad and harsh, poor times, because both came from very poor family. And essentially, their families taught them the value of money, the value of family, the value of like education, and not having anything, but having to work for it and get highly educated. So thankfully, they spoiled me in a way where they were able to give me high level education in Colombia. I went to a private school. I was able to, you know, get sports that usually people go, you know, get into these different sports that usually people would not get, like horseback riding, let's say hockey. And my brother would get hockey, which is a very expensive sport. But we would always know the stories, and we would always visit my grandparents and grandmother of where they came from. And it was very poor. It was a very poor family. People that, for example, my dad taught me how he had no food on the table, literally, and my mom had to feed him and barely had for the bus to go to university. He was a stick, like so skinny that he had to like work his ass off and get the greatest grades in school so that he can get some sort of help by the government or by the, you know, just scholarships as a whole to be a good student and be able to afford everything. So all of these things I was able to really, really understand because I was always a very curious individual, knowing where I come from, like what's that dirt that my family have been able to really go through. But I never actually went through that dirt when I was in Colombia. But there's only one thing that I did go through, and that was acceptance by people. Why? Because I was different. So before coming to Canada, I was just a chubby little guy that was very, very nerdy, liked school or was good at math, you know, was good at physics, was good at video games, played video games all the time, and ultimately had very little friends. And all my friends were also very nerdy. Like they were, you know, they were those guys that you would not think that, you know, these guys would ever do anything in their life or have friends, because we were not social people. Like, but that's because we were different. Ultimately, I was different. And me being accepted into like the regular day-to-day was a struggle for me because I was bullied. Right, people would see me as acting differently, doing, saying different things, or ultimately hanging out with different crowds, or not doing what the day to day of people would do, and that kind of gave me like a very, very, let's say, low self esteem. I was not confident at all, and I was not able to speak with chicks. I was not able to, you know, talk with people in public. Even though I had great ideas and like this crazy weird stuff happening in my head, just society itself or just my peer was like kind of like damaging my ability to express myself and my ability to like move forward. So that happened in Colombia. Like I was literally called dirty because one time I fell on a soccer game and my entire shirt was dirt. Because when I fell, there was a lot of dirt. Like there was a lot of like, just picture a soccer field that had, you know, had recently rain coming in, and there was like this big pond of just dirt, and I fell into that. And then people at school would call me dirty, like you're dirty. What's up? And that, you know, that kind of thing was like, kind of like driving me to not talk to people again or not really being able to be myself and be confident. So when I got to Canada, I was just like, oh my God, it's kind of like a new world. You know, when you get to a new country, your parents don't even tell you. And that's what essentially happened when I was 14 years old. And it was a new place and a new thing for me to go over and kind of figure out how this Esteban that was chubby, was weird or odd at school and, you know, was being bullied, how can we do something about it? And during my new phases in Canada. But the biggest thing that changed is that when I got to Canada, everything was different. In Colombia, we had everything, high-level education, a great house to live in. We had, like I said, sports, like expensive sports and all of this stuff. But in Canada, when you get as an immigrant, to a new country, usually you have to live either on a shared, let's say a shared apartment or in the basement. Your parents have to go and work as cleaning ladies or cleaning people. They have to do construction. They have to go through this entire struggle to just get money on the table because you're moving to a new country where the education or the university title is not accepted, right? So right away, it was like a full change of environment and entire new concept for me getting into the North American culture and kind of like going through the struggle of not even being able to communicate properly. I wasn't even able to say, hey, what's going on? How can I help you? Or let's be friends, because I couldn't speak English. Literally, I had absolutely no way for me to communicate because I was so bad at English. And that put me in a position where it's like, wow, like something here needs to change. And my parents are now doing these jobs that are paying them like $9, $10 an hour. And they're struggling. And now they're coming to a new country, not really knowing the language. I have to like somehow like show up. But it didn't come that easy because essentially me not knowing another language, me not really understanding the culture, right? Not having friends and having this low self-esteem that I had because I was bullied so much in middle school and at the beginning of high school in Colombia, it was a big struggle, right? But I did have one thing clear is that usually immigrants, whenever they get to another country, they see hope. And why? Because there's no ceiling for us. And if we see an American or we see a Canadian person achieving great things, and ultimately these people are, I'm not going to say they're not smart, but they're not the smartest person, but they have leverage or they have the opportunity of being born in one of the best countries in the world, that makes me feel that there is hope to do something, right? So I would always see these individuals that, you know, I would come into school in the first year of school, for example, I would notice that I was way more advanced at mathematics, for example. I was already covering a few topics that in my country was, you know, I covered like either the year before or 2 years before. And these people were like, well, we're just learning it and we're in the same grade. So I noticed that Canadians had a very limited high school education. And then whenever they go to university, that's kind of when they make them choose exactly what they want to do based on what they're currently do. But like the high school education is like, it's like very poor in my opinion. Whenever I was in Colombia, they would make me literally learn everything and anything. So I came in highly educated and I would see the opportunity, like these guys are not as knowledgeable of what we are doing right now. And I'm literally going through this entire struggle with my parents of, you know, having a cleaning job. They can't get accepted into an actual job because whatever it is, right? Like,
Esteban, let me pause you for a second. Let me go back a little bit just to kind of fill in some details here. So explain a little bit about what your parents did as careers in Colombia, and then what was this transition that, was it a forced move to Canada? Was it something that was an opportunity? Kind of fill in those details a little bit.
So us going to Canada was an opportunity that essentially our parents saw, because Colombia is a country where even though it's right now safe, everything is well for them, and actually they're back, Canada had unlimited potential in terms of the life that we could create for ourselves. And that's what my parents actually saw. Why? Because it's one of the highest quality countries in the world. It is super safe. So my parents wanted to move us when we were kids just to achieve the highest potential that we could do, just because we know that in Colombia, it's very hard to actually, because it's an underdeveloped country, it's a third world country, it's very hard to actually have the same type of success that you would have if you were to, for example, be born here, or for example, just live in a country like Canada or the US. So that's exactly the reason why my parents decided to move.
Awesome. And when they came here, you said that they were getting into jobs like cleaning, doing like construction. What was their trades before that? And was that not an option when they came there? Or is that just the way that the ladder works when you move into maybe somewhere like Canada?
Yeah. So my mom, for example, she was she had a very high end position in like pharmaceutical chemistry companies. So pharmaceutics companies, whatever. And she essentially was a manager, and she was, if you were to like compare it to like salary, she was making maybe $11,000 per month if she was to be working here, but she was making that in Colombia. And she would have this high level education and this position where she would manage people and projects, so that this pharmaceutical companies would run high quality assurance and high quality management for the products that they create. And when she came here, when she came to Canada, essentially her diploma was not valid. Like, she had to go through a process, which essentially is going through university once again. And most immigrants go through this process. Like, their diplomas are not valid. They're either, they need to validate it, or they need to take essentially the program once again so that they can work in the same field that they were working in the country. So the first option, as basically not having education in your resume, that's essentially what it is to do the low barrier of entry jobs that doesn't require English, doesn't require communication. It only requires intense labor. That's about it, right? So that's why whenever you go as a Latin American person to Canada or the US, you would usually go to a cleaning service company or construction, where you don't need to talk. Like, literally just need to know exactly what to do and how to do it. And cleaning is not, you know, it's not rocket science, and just make it happen. That's about it.
Nice. And so on this journey, your parents got to Canada. Like, where did you pick up this tendency to want to be an entrepreneur? Did your parents eventually turn into entrepreneurs? Was it something that you wanted more, like you saw what your parents went through, like, I want more control? Like, where did that spark for you to eventually become an entrepreneur? Where did it start at?
It essentially started when I got into high school. And I started changing my environment, and I noticed that I could easily, with the hope of me first learning English properly, because I didn't know English, get to a high paying position in a Fortune 500 company and being able to get hired by a large corporation where, you know, they would pay me for what I'm capable of. But that's because I was thinking big. And that's the fundamental of entrepreneurship. I believe that if you have the capabilities of thinking big, and that there is this big hope, because you're in this current state and you want to achieve this, but this is like something that it's so big, it's so large that you need to go through. You don't know what you need to go through, but no matter what, you want to achieve that. That hope and that desire to be successful is what started my entire entrepreneurship. Even though I did not know that I had to at some point be creating solutions for different products that we currently sell, or creating a business, that started everything. Me having the hope of earning something so good that, being in my country, I wouldn't have been able to actually do it, or I could, but it wouldn't be as easy. Because whenever I going down the road and graduated, I realized that I had achieved that, but that was not enough, right? I had achieved that, like a high paying job or a really well-known company or a large company, but that's not enough. And I needed to really get out of that block that I sorry, that's my dog that is actually screaming, saying, "Esteban, shut up." But essentially that barrier that you usually have after you get to that point where you think it's the best point, and knowing that there is much more than that, that is essentially for me the fundamentals of a great start to be an entrepreneur. Just thinking that there's a bigger thing than that.
So I want to talk about this, right? There's a few things, like kind of going back to, you know, why there was maybe a essential downgrading of work, right? When your parents moved to Canada, and that's a lot of times, regardless of the quality of education in another country, North American universities, they honor like what they believe, what their Department of Education's, you know, this is when universities are considered accredited and non-accredited. And if they're non-accredited, then it doesn't count. And there's so many work industries that they only care if your bachelor's degree is only good if it came from an accredited university, right? University of Hard Knocks doesn't count. So that makes total sense. Another thing that you mentioned, you know, regardless of how great of a life that you can live in another country, no matter how high performing you are there, at the end of the day, living in, you know, especially in North America with the United States and Canada, there's just so much more leverage here, just in the power of the currency, the power of the dollar. It can go so much further here than it can in basically the rest of the world for the most part. And if you are trying to build a legacy, you're trying to build a business, you know, a lot of mentors that I really respect, they talk about compound leverage, and the US dollar, you know, the Canadian dollar, our currencies are some of the very few ones that are worth enough across the world where we can go and now hire people from other countries. We can delegate certain tasks. And a lot of times, you know, those opportunities aren't available for people in these other areas. So that's 100% true. One thing that I want to, you know, that I want to commend you for, man, is that, you know, we've had a lot of extremely high performing entrepreneurs on, some fantastic human beings. And one thing that I always see in them is that they're driven by a few things, right? Sometimes it's fear of failure. And then sometimes it's like this ridiculous, ambitious pursuit of success. And another thing that I've seen in quite a few people who are extremely freaking hungry, and also I've noticed they're also really, really young, just like you are. And that's this, I don't know if it's a fear. It may not even be a fear, but it's this idea that whatever I achieve, it may not be enough. And that just pushes you to keep going and going and going. So, I mean, you know, I kind of want to get back to the timeline. So we're in Canada. Your parents are working their asses off to provide, right? Just like all good immigrant parents do, which has been a theme lately, Logan, right? Immigrant parents on our podcast. We've had a lot of, you know, first generations and second generations who've had to struggle and kind of go through the mud a little bit to lay out their children for success. So, I mean, take us through that. So, right, you're in Canada, you know, this is past what, 14, 15 now, you're probably like in your mid teens. And now at this point, you know, you're navigating difficult communication. You can't communicate with your people, right? With people around you. So, I mean, dude, how do you get through the remainder of like high school and get into the early adult years?
Man, it's actually crazy because I was also bullied because I couldn't speak the language actually properly. Like people are mean for everything and anything, right?
Bro, I'm gonna stop you here. For anyone that's watching, freaking raise your kids right. Stop bullying other people. Like this is, I feel really bad for you. I'm so sorry that you had to go with that. In Colombia, you're like, all right, I'm gonna move to the, you know, another part of the world. We're gonna be good. And then people bully for something else. That's just.
Yeah, I mean, like I was coming from Colombia being bullied by because I was different and chubby and not social. And then I got to Canada, and then there will be some people that they will call you Mexican even though you're Colombian just because you have an accent or because you don't speak the language, and they call you not only Mexican but dirty Mexican, or they'll call you being either Mexican or things like that, right? And then, so all these things, or for example, me as a Colombian, they'll every single time they'll grab into the idea that Pablo Escobar basically is us, right? Like the drugs and cocaine, that's us. And even though that happened, like what, 31 years old, 31 years ago, it's still us. So you get to Canada facing another problem or another, like you call it, an adversity that someone would have and make them stronger. But you have to go through that. And I have to say that people that actually are born in this country or that are born in Canada, they're born with everything. Like this country gives you literally everything. And even Canada, like Canada doesn't even allow you to be homeless because they'll give you food, shelter, they'll give you education, free education. They'll give you everything. Like people are born there. They can be born, but they become entitled. Everything offends them. Everything damages them. Like they live in such a great country that for them, like I own the world, and the world actually owes me everything. And that's what immigrants usually don't have, because they have to go through dirt, right? They have to go through that initial stages of getting to know this new country or getting to know the new world. And there is hope of like succeeding, of there is hope of showing up that they can prove themselves or that they can become much better than what people see them as, right? Because usually they will see you as, like I said, a bean eater Mexican, right? And I'm like, look, did you know that Mexicans are basically the core of the automotive industry in the United States? If there was no Mexico, like literally USA will be in such a hit. Like there will be no automotive industry. There will be no manufacturing. There will be no assembly. And everything will cost so much more because we have amazing Mexican engineering companies that are going to take care of that. But either way, going back to the topic, like, man, I had to literally fail so many times pronouncing words. I still do. Like at this point, I would say some words that they need a little bit of a better fix. But I had to like literally try so many times on speaking. And because I wanted to change my environment and I wanted to show up as this person that, okay, I'm gonna make sure that I can create friends here. I'm gonna start talking with people. And it doesn't matter if I'm gonna do it wrong. It doesn't matter if I'm going to fuck up, right? So trying the language it's one of the best things that any immigrant that doesn't speak English would do. It doesn't matter if you're gonna fail, it doesn't matter if you're gonna make a mistake or if you're going to say something that doesn't make sense, people will correct you. And some people will actually help you. Like some people will actually like take you to the right path. Hey man, like, I don't understand what you're saying. Do you mean this? Right. And just a matter of doing that. One time I remember in university, it's my first experience of actually living only with Canadians. And because I lived only with Canadians, that was the full start of me getting, you know, getting rid of my Colombian accent. So my accent would be kind of very similar to, I don't want to say Sofia Vergara, but it will be something that will be sometimes really hard to understand. But when I got to university and I started living in dorms, these Canadians that I lived with basically pushed me, because I had a few friends that were Europeans, or I had a few friends that would mock me because of my accent. And ultimately that makes me so furious, because I knew I wanted to speak properly or get to know, just be understood, but I couldn't. So I had to try real hard into like listening how people speak, how people would say certain words by either watching movies or just speaking with people or asking for corrections and having these feedback loops. That it pushed me to essentially remove my accent, because I had friends or had people that they'll mock me so much, and I'll be like, hey man, stop it. Like, like I'm trying to speak here, and then they'll just mock me because I'm not pronouncing my words correctly. One time I had to tell this guy from Albania that had a perfect English, but he was born in Albania, but he was there for in Canada since he was 5 years old, so his English was perfect. And he started mocking me because I couldn't say something. Like, he literally said it back, but he said it in a fun way to make me feel like I was a failure, essentially. And then I just stood up and I told him, man, with my poor English, I told him, get the hell out of my room, get the hell out of my dorm. I was so mad. And ultimately, through time, he became my friend. But I literally stood up for myself and told him, hey, man, like, you have to, like, instead of, like, mocking me, just, if you want to be my friend, just tell me exactly how it is. Like, show me the path, right? So all of that, like, it was a big struggle to, like, remove my accent. But 2 years in, I would say that my English got so much better. And because I was able to communicate, I was able to get to the culture. I was able to, like, learn, like, the jokes and sarcasm and learn, like, exactly what these Canadians were saying. Ultimately, like, that made everything to become easier, right? Because once you learn how to communicate and once you learn the culture and the language, everything just becomes easier in terms of, like, doing everything and anything.
Yeah, I think what you went through with learning a language, especially English, or with learning the language of English, is what a lot of people go through when learning entrepreneurship, is that you just got to put yourself in there. You got to put yourself in the game, and you learn by making mistakes. You learn by having the market tell you that you suck, that, like, the market really bullies you, right? And people can either get mad about it, or you can listen to the market, listen to other people, and stand up for yourself, get better, and take the feedback and use that as an opportunity to actually perfect whatever your skill is. And in your case, you're talking about English, but eventually, like, those skill sets transferred over into business.
100%. So
let's transition a little bit into business. So talk with us about, you work for a corporate company and you made that transition into entrepreneurship. What was the decision behind that? And then what was your experience? Was it very similar to learning English?
Yeah. So at this point, I already kind of was speaking the language. I feel it was, some people ask me, hey, do you think in Spanish or do you think in English? Now I'm like, I think in English. I actually can think in both languages. And going to this, like, corporations after graduation was just not easy. Like, some people that are listening here, everything requires daily efforts and sacrifices that you got to do in a day to day, and nothing is given. Like, no one is going to go and give you the job. You have to, like, stand up for yourself and actually do those daily activities. So, for example, me getting into that big corporation, it wasn't just like that. I didn't just graduate from engineering and then I was given a job at Chrysler. No, my first steps was really, like, putting myself in a position where I could give value to the marketplace. And, you know, honestly, I was okay by giving away free work for getting an immense amount of value and immense amount of knowledge. So the first job that I ever had after university was in a big company, but I had to offer my let's say my work for free. I told him, hey, I want to have an internship in your company. And I cold called these individuals and I told them, as long as I'm helping you guys in whatever project you have, but I learn and have gained the knowledge with the opportunity of getting hired full time, that's what I want to pursue. And at that time, I was doing Uber Eats and Uber Driver. And in the morning, I would go to that office and work for free for an entire 8 hours on the project that this company that did HVAC systems and engineering system sales for restaurants and other type of industrial food companies. I would do that for free, and I did that for an entire month. Now the vacancy, like the job didn't open up, but they did give me a good referral and a review for me to, like, pursue another job. And I did exactly the same thing to get a job in an engineering company that would actually pay me money. I would cold call the person because I would do the daily activity that I had to do. I had to like scrape the list and cold call these managers that potentially could give me a job, right? Awesome. So those things, those boring things is ultimately what got me the job. And it's not like I just got it and I applied and I went to Indeed and I waited for the application to process or LinkedIn jobs. It just didn't happen that way, right? Everything was me hustling. Everything was me working for that thing.
That's awesome. You know, I have a very similar story. I was in my last semester of college. I was getting an exercise science degree. And up to that point, I got rejected from every single fitness job that I had ever applied for. And so I did very similar to what you did, is I emailed 20 personal trainers who were in town and I just asked them if I could work for them for free. And one of those guys got back to me and said yes. And I interned with him for 6 months. I didn't get paid a single dollar. But I remember sitting there after my very first week of working with him and being like, damn, I just learned more in this week than I had learned my previous 4.5 years of college. And I was so grateful for the opportunity because it led me to actually getting a paid job in the fitness industry. It actually led for me to getting a front desk position at the gym that I later on became a personal trainer at. But I think working for free and like getting your foot in the door, especially when there is no other option, is one of the fastest ways and best ways if you can come to the, like, if they put your ego aside and just say, I'm going to do whatever it takes. It's a great way to get your foot into the door. And so Sam, tell me your thoughts on that and maybe some of the strategies for any like new entrepreneurs who are out there. Like, how do you get your foot in the door? How do you get some respect? How do you get yourself into a situation where you can get paid to learn, or you can just like work for free to learn?
Yeah. It's one of those amazing things where I want to commend you, Esteban, because you did what a lot of, unfortunately, this is so true. Earlier on, you mentioned that people who were born in North America, they tend to feel a little bit entitled, right? And, you know, let's just say with the newer generation of people coming up, they think that becoming an entrepreneur is extremely easy. And the reality is entrepreneurship requires a lot of very resilient skill sets. And resiliency in and of its own is a skill set, right? And one thing that I have to commend you on is the fact that every step of the way, in Colombia, you had to go through hard shit. In Canada, you went through hard shit. Going to uni, right? When university, you had other Europeans there who were also foreigners and they were still giving you shit. You went through that. And then guess what? Then you went and did jobs that maybe other people would not have wanted to do. And you went and freaking grinded it out to develop what? The right skill sets that would then serve you to be an entrepreneur. So, you know, whether you go and do that to get paid, right? Logan, we've told new investors and new entrepreneurs a lot of times that sometimes the best way to go do this game is to do what you just said. So go and work for someone for free, right? And that way you can learn. But a lot of times people want to skip that step when that may be the only option in front of them. And then you have to ask yourself, how bad do you freaking want this? How bad do you want financial freedom? How bad do you want entrepreneurship? How bad do you want to be your own boss? And sometimes the only answer that you have in front of you is to swallow your pride, go do some shit that is really boring or tedious, or you may hate your life. Like cold call, dude, I can't even imagine cold calling. Like it's the worst thing on planet Earth to me. So to everyone listening, I mean, like going to internship, that's huge. So a little bit about my background was that, you know, I used to work for the federal government and there was no, and even with a master's degree, you don't go from master's degree to working for the federal government in the industry that I did. We had to intern. It's the only way to qualify yourself. It's the only way to get reps in, to get the clearance levels that we needed to. And guess what? Those are humbling experiences. Right? Driving across town, driving 30, 40 minutes just to not get paid, to lose money on gas. So guess what? To work doing other things, other part-time gigs, just to pay for the gas, to then go be an intern for free for 6 to 8 hours a day. And just guess what? When you're an intern, I don't know about you guys, but my intern experience was this. It was great. Would never trade it for the world. But basically like the runt in the office, right? Yeah. You're basically everyone's bitch. It's just kind of the way it goes. But guess what? More resilience, right? More resilience, more skill sets. You learn how to acclimate to culture when you're the lowest performer in the room. So I freaking love it, guys. I think a lot of people, especially if you think that, hey, I want to be an entrepreneur. I want to be a multi-millionaire. I want to be like Esteban and I want to start several companies and become a badass living in Miami. Great. You have to do some really uncomfortable shit before you can get to that step. Esteban had to go through a lot of strife in his young life. Yeah. Just to get to where he is now. There is no immediate shortcut unless your parents are rich as hell. And that's a little bit of a different story. And then I may not even give you credit for it.
But even even that like story, the story of you being like working for free and doing the being the runt and doing all those things, like it's a story you have to tell your employees when you hire them. It's like, I've been where you at. I can relate to you. And that actually is really powerful if you're running a team, you're not just like a solopreneur. Is when you can relate to your employees, you can relate to your staff, they connect with you more. And they're like, you know what? If he did it, I can do it. They see where you're at now. And they're willing to actually work for free. They're actually willing to do the hard shit because they can actually see what it looks like in 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, based on what you're doing right now. And I think that's like so, so valuable that you're willing to actually put your gloves on, right? And get to work. I think that's so powerful.
Yeah, so one big thing I would say
a little bit here, move us into your entrepreneur journey. Like, talk to us, like, what business did you start and what are the skill sets that you had to develop in order for you to actually decide to make that jump from being employed to an entrepreneur?
Yeah, so my first step into like entrepreneurship was me being in that company and me wanting to do something else that was just different than me being stuck in an office. Because once I was stuck in an office, I realized that, oh my God, the ceiling is just here. It might take me years to get to another steps. I want to do this faster because I know I can do it. Like, I have the grind and I have the mindset. I have the risk factor of doing it. And it was me trying Amazon FBA, fulfillment by Amazon. You know, like a lot of ads come out and then they tell you, do fulfillment by Amazon, choose your own product, do private label. And that's essentially what I did.
Were you doing that while you still had your job?
I had my job, 100%.
So it was a side hustle at that time.
If you have the ability to make money while starting your side hustle and you're earning great money, like why would you quit? Like have this as a cash cow or something that is going to fund your little business. And when you start seeing that, hey, it's time to go in, give me one second. And we start seeing, hey, it's time to go full in, then you are going to use this cash, these reserves that you have created in order to be able to reinvest in your business and move faster because now you have a little bit of money. And essentially, I started doing Amazon FBA. I put some money, had some money saved up, obviously from my mainly payments, and that got me to try things. And that's one of the most important things, like trying exactly different things that would be around the spectrum of where you want to be. So if you are not entirely sure, which at the time it was not entirely sure of doing whatever, I just tried a few different things and I went all in into them. Like I tried Amazon FBA. I went all in into that. I realized that selling very small products was something I didn't really want to do for the long term. And someone reached out to me saying, like, what are you doing? This is Amazon FBA. What have you learned from this? And this was a person that had an agency, running an agency already profitable, and kind of saw my hustle because I was documenting everything in social media, and asked me, like, have you ever heard of lead generation? Have you ever heard of the power of generating leads? I'm like, no, I don't know what lead generation is. Like, had no idea, like, what even a lead meant. And after doing Amazon FBA and knowing that the profits were like very minimal, was selling masks. And it's funny because I was selling masks 1 year and a half before COVID. I'm like, what?
You got to be a billionaire by now. I mean, if you were doing COVID masks, wow.
And then I was like not liking it. Like I tried it. I went full in. Whatever you do, try it. Go all in. I got the proposition. I got the proposal of working with another agency owner as a kind of like a not like a official partner, but someone that would take care of their real estate department and their personal training department. So it was two departments that they were doing because they had lawyers, they had different niches that were kind of weird. They had gyms. And and different things that they would do lead generation for. And I had to learn Facebook ads in order to do that, because everything that they were doing was for Facebook, was with Facebook. But I knew that I was not going to earn a salary, because what they were looking for was that I would get the clients, I would do the marketing, I'll do the fulfillment, I'll generate the results for them. I'll be doing the account management, and all of that was on me. I had to get the money, I had to take the payments, I had to run the campaigns, and I had to ultimately maintain the customers happy. And all of that was basically, again, for free. But I already had tried doing things for free. So I already had that muscle, the muscle of sacrifice, right? The muscle of being able to earn something bigger because you're doing something really hard right now. Yeah. And I started doing lead generation for real estate agents and actually personal trainers. Everything was Facebook ads. And that's what got me into the game. Like my friend who gave me the opportunity to go into his company and be kind of like a department partner and everything split 50-50 was the one that saw that through my hustle, I could achieve something for his company. And it was like, hey, come here, work with me, and let's get some clients. That's essentially how I started.
That's awesome. You know, there's a couple of things I want to unpack in there and like take a couple of lessons out of there that I see consistently works in lots of entrepreneurs across different industries. And the first one is actually keeping your job, keeping your income stream, and then going out and doing like a side hustle, especially if it is a W-2 job and it's your first experience in the entrepreneur game. The amount of skill sets that you must learn in entrepreneurship will blow your freaking mind until you actually are in the game. You start to realize like, oh my gosh, I thought this game was only the fulfillment, right? Which is only the helping the clients do the thing, but it's also about sales. It's also about marketing. It's also about cash flow management. It's also about systems and processes. And then at that point, then eventually it's into scaling, and then it's hiring and firing. And there's so many different things that you don't know until you don't know that your first business is going to fail. Like plain and simple, like your first business is not going to be your last business. And if it is, like, that's great, but the chances are against you. So I think that's a really valuable thing that you said right there. And then the second thing you said also is that just being in the game allows you to meet people and connect with people and start to see different opportunities. Because again, when you do Amazon fulfillment, you don't know what you don't know. And then you're in it. All of a sudden you start to see some of the shortcomings. You start to see like some of that naiveness that you had going into it. Now, you know why it's not this great, amazing thing. And then you're able to apply that knowledge, that experience into the next thing you do, which in this case was running ads for one of your friends. Right. And I think there's just value in being in the game and just understanding that you're acquiring skill sets, but at the same time, if you're able to hold your W-2, you'll hold your steady income. There's so much power into that. And so anybody who comes into the entrepreneur game, I'm like, dude, that's your superpower. The superpower is that you don't need to make money from your side hustle or from your business. You want to, but your superpower is that you don't need to. And so you actually can take more risk. You can put yourself out there. All the money that you make from it, you can reinvest it, which is what it sounds like what you did, into either another thing or back in the same thing again, and just continue to test and continue to try to figure out what works. So
yeah, I would say that while I was holding my job and the one that would give me money, I reinvested into, and I realized this later, into developing skill sets. Because that's ultimately what I didn't have, right? I was going to an unknown and it was so fearful because I didn't have the skill sets, right? And ultimately experience is built out because you have skill sets, you have some sort of knowledge, and you've been able to try things out using those skill sets. And and time has passed or some sort of tangible results have been created through that, right? So it's just reinvesting back into getting skill sets was one of the biggest things that I ended up doing.
Yeah, I think that's so powerful, is like invest in yourself, right? And I've invested so much money into mentors, in whether it be when I was in the fitness industry, in the real estate industry, like Sam and I both are in the real estate industry, and we invested lots of money into our continued education in that realm. And so there's no powerful thing that you can do that will accelerate your progress, which is investing in yourself, which, to be really clear, Esteban, is like, it's building skill sets. And the fastest way to get the skill set is just go to somebody who knows what the hell they're doing and pay for their time, pay for their information, pay for all this, all the arrows they have in their back, and so you can shortcut that process.
Yeah, the reality is, I mean, like, over the next 6 months, I'm going to be spending at least six figures in, honestly, self-development, in proximity development, and upgrading my circle to newer and higher level entrepreneurs. And then also, like, in some business growth, which is not even like, oh, advertising. No, it's not even that. I'm actually spending money to make the structure of my business better. And to anyone that's, you know, listening, you guys maybe haven't done a first deal yet. You haven't gotten your first company off the ground yet. You know, all these types of things. Just know that before you can get predictable results in your business from, like, your marketing and sales efforts, you need to start getting predictable growth as a person first.
Yeah.
Right. All of this right here, the business results will happen as a result of your personal work ethic, your personal traits, your skill sets, all being in alignment with your company. If they're in disalignment, guess what? Your business results will come very inconsistently, not predictably, and you can't make great decisions based off that. So, I mean, Esteban, you've got, at this point, you've got Hustle Media, right? You're doing digital marketing at a high level right now, especially for real estate investors. Are you working with any other kind of industries there?
So everything that I've been doing is actually focusing in only one thing. Like, there is one thing that you got to understand is that attention can be a double-edged sword for you. Like, if you have the attention in only one thing and start just giving that attention full and in only one thing, you'll progress much, much more faster, just faster. And that's what I didn't do at the beginning. And I learned that going all in into one niche, one product that you get so good at, one specific avatar or one specific vertical, it was going to give me just a superpower, essentially, right? Because you become specialized. And that's everything we do. Real estate investors, which in that umbrella, there is wholesalers, creative investors, flippers, and I call them badass agents.
That's awesome. You know, one of my early mentors, I hired him almost 6 years ago, is Alex Ramosi, which most people know him now. Nobody knew him back then. But his main message that he talks about is, like, doing one thing, right? Like your attention is your most valuable resource. Doing one thing is super powerful. But if you actually listen to his story, how he got to that conclusion was by doing lots of businesses and doing lots of things. So he speaks from experience. And what I've seen with new entrepreneurs is that no matter how much we tell them to do one thing, they're never gonna do one thing. Just what I've seen. So my suggestion is, like, go do a bunch of things. Like, really, like go do a bunch of things. Understand that once you start to see enough patterns, you start to see different businesses, what you actually come to realize is that every business is the same. You think that being in the cleaning business is different than being in the digital marketing agency. There is obviously some differences, but ultimately it's a business, right? So the same problems that you will encounter in doing a digital marketing agency will be the same that you encounter in a cleaning business, will be the same thing you encounter in a wholesale business, it'll be the same thing that you encounter in an information product. There's obviously nuances to all those, but the same things that will hold you back from growing is it right here, right? It's character traits, it's beliefs. And those things can be mastered no matter what business you're in. So I'm actually in the camp of, like, because most people just don't listen. I'm more of a realist rather than, like, staying high on my chair and be like, you need to do this, is go do a bunch of businesses, get as many skill sets as you possibly can. So then you can eventually start to work on the things that will make you the most money, which is focus, but that is a character trait, right? That's a belief as well. And until you really see evidence that that's the case, the likelihood of somebody just sticking to one thing over and over again when they never actually, like, got to experience the other side of the fence, they didn't get to experience that the grass is literally just as green, it's just as, or just as rough, or just the same on the other side. Until you actually have that feel and that touch, the belief won't be there. So I agree. But also, if you're new, like, go ahead and, like dip your toes in a bunch of things. That way you can get the skill sets. And really, that's what you're going for. You're getting skill sets. So go pay for those skill sets. Invest in mentors. Invest in education. Invest in experience.
Esteban, I want you to talk to me a little bit about the work that you're doing with remote Latinos, because I've seen you speak on it a lot, right? On social media, in different videos that I've seen you with. It is something that it's become clear to me that it is not a just a business for you. You are very passionate about the way that you speak about it. You're passionate about, you know, changing the maybe the focus and the light that people speak with in regards to a term that I know that you're not a massive fan of, virtual assistant. Kenda, tell me about what does that company look like? Tell me about the mission there. Because every time like I'm scrolling through my feed and I see you and then I notice you're talking about remote Latinos, like I have to stop and listen because I'm like, here's an entrepreneur who's created something that he's very passionate about and I can't wait to see how it evolves. So lead us into that.
Yeah, so I really want to make remote Latinos kind of like the Apple of the virtual assistant companies. So just different, stop doing what everyone's doing and treating the VA service the way that everyone treats the VA service. And that mission comes because I myself could also be a VA. So if I could be a VA because I'm living, let's say in another country or I'm living somewhere in South America, right? I go to Colombia, I go back, stay with my parents. You're not going to give me like high level tasks. Like it's not like I'm going to like be cocky about it, but I think I can handle high level tasks, right? So if when you give that comparison in my stage, well, I believe that there is people that are living in South America, Central America, in Mexico, not necessarily living here in the US, that have the capabilities of helping you run the business in even higher level tasks, all right? With the ability of sharing very similar culture. They've gone through, again, they've gone through dirt, they go through their entire struggles of what their country gives them, but they want to be proven, like they want to prove themselves. They've learned the language for a reason. You don't learn a language when you're comfortable speaking Spanish for no reason. You want to do that because you want to excel at something and you're going to get given be given an opportunity. And a lot of these people usually either travel to the US, they try to become resident, become resident, or some of them can never ever come to the US or come for a very short period of time, but they have that grind, they have that grit, all right? And those are the people that we are going to look for. So for example, there's people that lived in the US for a short period of time, couldn't get to become a resident, couldn't become a citizen, and they had to go back to their country to continue their life, but they speak English really well. And guess what? You can teach them everything that your real estate investing business, wholesaling business does, whether that's a person that does lead management, whether that's a person that does appointment setting and follow-up specialists, whether that's a acquisition manager that can close deals for you, help you lock up contracts, right? Executive assistants or a transaction coordinator, even dispo managers, right? So there is a lot of opportunity that people are missing out on taking your business, not only remotely, which is, should have actually closed that FaceTime. But there's an opportunity to take these people inside your business because you're not only doing it remotely now, but you're also not having to like take into this big payrolls. Like, for example, Americans, usually they would start at $40,000, $45,000 a year. And that's like minimum for a role that is like, for example, an appointment setter or something like that. When you pay someone in South America that has experience, has the grit, has the capacity, you pay even a third of that cost, right? But not only that, they're even going to work harder than an American person. I was talking about how you're born into this country, and for some reason they're born so entitled, and like everything offends them, everything is damaging, and like, and you as an American don't see that you've been born in the best country in the world. There's opportunity, just do it. But these people do. Like this Latin American people, they see the opportunity. They're being given a job in the United States, not necessarily living in the United States, but they're given a job from an American company, and they'll do everything that it takes to like do its best job. And that's how we run our companies. Like we have American people, we have Canadians, but we have Latin Americans, and they're by far the best workers that we've ever hired. because they want to prove themselves. They're like working for this American company. These guys are, you know, hustling real hard. They work usually harder and more hours than an American would do. And this is not even asking them to do that. Like, they will just do it. Like, it's just, it's something that happens naturally on them, especially if they are working for an American company, because it's their opportunity. It's their hope. So that's why I'm very passionate about it.
Esteban, tell me this. So I'm a real estate investor and I'm sitting there and I'm like, this sounds really awesome. Like, I want to at least look into potentially getting a virtual assistant in, you know, in Central America. Right.
Yeah.
And so obviously we know about the Filipinos, but obviously like one way is we can go to your company. It sounds like you find these people, you train them, and then you basically hand them off to a real estate investor. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So let me ask for somebody who's maybe like more of like a do-it-yourself, like they want to manage, they want to find, like, where's a good place for them to go start to recruit these people and give them jobs, give them opportunities? Like, is there certain websites? Is there certain places that they're congregating?
Yeah, for sure. So if you want to be going straight forward to this, look, one of our main sources of getting high talent is sourcing through Facebook groups. These people are there. And just make sure that you also go through those that are in Spanish, for example, because not everyone is like going inside the English speaking groups, but they're in Spanish. And we have several channels such as LinkedIn as well, where you'll find all these individuals that have jobs, let's say in a North American company, they're remote, and you can literally message them. You can literally post jobs and people will apply. If you post a job in Colombia, for example, people will apply to that, and you'll be able to capture these people that are interested, because it says American dollars, American pay, USD, right? So you're able to like post into these Facebook groups. You can utilize places like Upwork. You can utilize places even like Fiverr for getting creative talent, LinkedIn. You can post in Indeed, like a job, like a regular job in English, and you can post it in Colombia, or you can post it in Argentina, you can post it in Panama, and you'll get all these applicants. And then as long as you're doing that and you're attracting these people and you have a great funnel, again, everything goes through a funnel, you're able to find these individuals that are looking to apply for, let's say, an acquisition position or lead management position. Just make sure that it's as obvious as possible. So, for example, sales appointment setter or a sales closer. Not everyone knows the language of real estate and wholesaling, because it's very unique language sometimes. For example, if you're looking for a disposition manager is almost the same in the industry as a client success manager or an account manager, where you're basically taking care of accounts and upselling and cross-selling and making their clients happy and things like that. So make sure that you use Facebook groups, use LinkedIn, use Upwork, use Fiverr, use Indeed. You can run Facebook ads in order to get people in, right? In a very simple app, but like get a job and get paid up to $2,000 starting at $600 a month. And you need 90% or 100% of English, and run a Facebook ad in order to get applicants and make them go through a survey. Like, let's say, for example, a Jot form that you can capture what's your level of English, what's your level of education, like what's their current employment status, what they're looking for. If it's for a specific job, then you ask them specific job questions, and then you get them to your funnel, you go and do a screening. And then ultimately, after the screening, you get your best applicants where you can start the interview process. It requires a lot of work, actually. Yeah. And it's something that we have a few people full time doing it. It's kind of like a lead generation funnel. It's the same thing. If you're doing acquisitions, it's the same thing for recruiting.
That's awesome. Thank you for
Logan knows this. Logan actually is one of the main differences between him and I. Logan is amazing at hiring people. He's amazing at hiring and training people. He's really good at delegating tasks and finding the right people to delegate to. I suck at it. I'm really freaking bad at it. It's just one of those things that just my brain doesn't click, right? So, dude, all that you just said, that just sounds like a lot of work to me. It sounds like a lot of work, and it's not, you know, my brain just doesn't compute. It'll shut down. So for a guy like me, right, where I don't want to do all that, and I don't want to have to become a recruiter now and do HR, like HR sounds boring to me. Like it sounds absolutely, I just want to close deals. I just want to make money. I don't want to do that. But I think that's where you can help me out, right? So if you're like me, if you're watching and you're like me and you're like, HR, payroll, like interviews, like heck no, that's not me. So make my life easier, man. How can you help a guy specifically like me? If I come to you and I say, hey, Esteban, I've got to position my company, let's just say my wholesale company, I need a closer. That's something that you can for sure help me out with.
Yeah. So look, I believe that everyone that has the ability to, that has the core abilities of a closer or a salesperson that can communicate, that is able to understand people, that has a willingness to help, that has the ability to just be in the shoes of someone else and have a process, follow a process, and just be great with people, has the ability to become an acquisition manager. So, for example, me, I've been doing sales my whole life and I didn't know, right? You would come to remotelatinos.com, you apply, you look for an acquisition manager, look for a closer or an appointment setter. And what we do is we look for those people that have those abilities. They'll send us videos and they'll give us a personality test, and we'll know based on the videos that they send and the way that they express themselves, the level of English and the personality test that we get, whether they could be capable of becoming closer. Now, the next step is to actually having a system on how to onboard this closer and a process and how to train this closer to be closing properties, right? To talk with homeowners and to get it locked up under contract. And as long as you have a great onboarding, right? A great enrollment in terms of like getting them to know that, here is your company mission, here is your vision, here's your core values, this is how we help our clients, which is homeowners, and this is the process that we do, the framework that we use in order to talk with them on the phone, and you give consistent training, you will be able to have those people from remotelatinos.com. And as a matter of fact, we're actually getting an internal trainer to... Basically, he has a course, and all these people, all this acquisition, just the candidates, they go through the course, and then we go through weekly trainings so that they are coming in more prepared to be an acquisition manager for real estate investing and wholesaling companies. And it's just a matter of making sure that you allow these people to try out the closer opportunity, to fail essentially. You give them the opportunity to start in a sales role, even though they don't have any experience doing acquisition manager for wholesaling, but you give them the rope and you train them well, you onboard them, like you change their mindset to be real estate wholesaling, to help homeowners. And so as long as you have that, you're going to be able to just create closers.
That's awesome. And so Esteban, that was really valuable. Thank you for sharing that process. And like very much like what Sam said, like you can either do that process, which is, it's a lot of friggin' work. It is a very valuable skill, but if you're in your business right now and you want to go faster, like hire someone like Esteban to kind of shortcut that process for you. And it can be something that you look at acquiring that skill later on. But as we start to wrap up here, Esteban, this podcast called The Origin Story. And so a lot of people right here, right now, are at the beginning of their origin stories. And so what advice do you give to them as they start to enter their story and they're getting ready to tell the story that you're telling now, years and years later?
So what advice if they're just starting out? I would say that one of the biggest things that gave me the ability to make the right decisions, and I'm not saying I make all good decisions, to be where I am right now is by shortening the time that you accomplish things or that you fail on things. And all of that comes down to taking risks, because once you accept that everything in life that is great, all greatness is never going to happen if you don't take risks, and you accept that fact, then you're going to be like, all right, I want to achieve something great. Fuck it. I'm going to go for it. Obviously, like, don't go and throw yourself off a bridge or something, do something stupid. But just make sure that everything that is holding you back is just your mind. Like, everything that's holding you back is those thoughts that you could potentially fail. And good if you fail, because now you're failing faster than if you would have waited 5 years or whatever, 1 year, 2 years. And now you have learned. Now, from that risk of trying this thing or investing in this new program or investing into this marketing or investing into hiring someone, right? Now you have shortened that time. And that's something I didn't do at the beginning. It took me about 2 years in order to learn that I needed to invest into my company. And it took me almost a year and a half to hire my first virtual assistant. And I was doing everything myself because I was not risking the little money that the virtual assistant would cost and risking giving the tasks to someone else that I don't know if they're going to do a good job, right? I was able to go for it, and I was able to shorten the time that I was going to be successful. And that's everything I would say to anyone that is starting. Be able to take risks, and that will help you shorten your success or the time that you would fail at something, and that's okay. You got to do that.
It's awesome. Esteban, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today and giving us some really good nuggets there at the end. Just appreciate everything that you shared, everything that you've done so far. And, you know, if somebody does want to connect with you and they want to know more about you, like, where's a good place for them to reach out to you?
So you can follow me on Instagram at ESTNICK. So Estenick. My full name is Esteban Nicholas. So I combine both. Estenick. And you can also go to our free Facebook group where we essentially teach marketing and conversion for real estate investors and wholesalers. It's called Real Estate Investing and Wholesaling Marketing and Conversion Mastery. So it's a Facebook group that is free, and we go live. We have podcast episodes. Sometimes go ahead and teach specific things about marketing, advertising, online advertising, and everything, things that have made us successful. I get guests in that Facebook group, and everything is free. It's for people to actually get value, because I know that at the beginning, I didn't have any of this. I didn't have any guidance. So you guys find me on Instagram and that Facebook group.
Dude, I love your story. Your story is just it's a really good one, and it shows. It's a story of resilience. It's a story of grit. It's the story of pursuit of excellence, because good enough is not good enough. And, you know, this is something that it's one of the best things when we have guests come on. And I've said this a few times to just a very few guests. And you fit this bill truly. And that's that, you know, Hustle Media is crushing. Remote Latinos is crushing, right? You've got your podcast is going to go to an elevated level once that, because we saw on social media those studio blueprints that you have. I can't wait for that to go and premiere live. I just can't wait to see what you do next, man, because everything that you're touching, right, you're passionate about, you understand how to do it at an extremely high level. And like we talked about earlier, man, your singular focus on each thing, it sounds like Remote Latinos wasn't even in the works until you had crushed doing digital marketing. now you're going to do this so well. I cannot wait to see what the next thing is. So guys, 100%, Esteban's an amazing person to connect with. One of my, just someone that I can't wait to collaborate with more and more and more. Can't wait to fly out to Miami and hang out with you pretty soon. That's going to be an epic one. But guys, if you want to connect with him, E-S-T-E, Nick, N-I-C-K, on Instagram. If you want PPC and Facebook ads, guys, I'm telling you right now, if you're wholesaling and you're not on PPC and inbound leads, like true inbound leads, I mean, you are missing the boat big time. But Esteban can help you out there too. And if you guys need acquisitions people, you need appointment setters, you need lead managers, you need some closers, and you're like me and you have zero idea how to hire people, that stuff goes right over your head, give Esteban a call at remotelatinos.com. Bro, it's been a fantastic time with you. It's been an absolute honor to have you on the show. Logan, I just love you. You're amazing. It's always great to be here with you. Guys, I think this was an amazing episode of The Origin Story. We will see you next week.
Hey, if you like this episode, go to Apple or Spotify, wherever you listen to this, follow the podcast, rate it and review it. And if you actually want the video version of this podcast, plus free trainings from Sam and I on things like marketing secrets, how to make $250,000 in a quarter, that's 4 months. Is that 3 months? I think it's 3 months. Or how I spent $189,000 on Facebook ads, or how I bought $4 million in real estate with no money whatsoever. Go to Sam, tell him where to go.
You need to go to theoriginstorypodcast.com/training, and we'll get you all those trainings for free along with the video version of this podcast.
Let's go.